Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
CAR Files, the Ultimate Panthers Podcast.
Welcome aboard. With week three in the books, it's time to take a spin around the league and tackle the biggest stories with the coach, Brian Billick, joining us as he does every week to share his insight regarding what happened last weekend and what's to come this weekend. In this week's Rapid Fire Overtime segment, the one and only Sean Salisbury joins us with his Tell It Like It Is take on the NFL. But as always, we start with the big interview. So let's get to it.
The big interview.
With us today is Sharon Thorsland from WBT in Charlotte, the sideline reporter for the Panthers radio network. So she knows she's got all the good intel, and you need to follow her on Twitter, Sharon A Sports. Sharon, how are you doing today?
I'm great, thanks. How are you?
We're doing all right. Maybe a little bit better than the Panthers are. This has been the start that they didn't envision. I know it's a very, very high standard. It's not entirely fair, but they've already doubled their losses from last season. What's the problem?
Yeah, everybody's sort of scratching their head around here asking themselves that same question. One of the big things that Ron Rivera talked about all preseason and all through OTAs was preaching against complacency and making sure that guys knew they had to start all over again, that this was not going to be another 15-1 season unless they started from scratch again. And I wouldn't say that anybody's complacent at this point, but there's certainly some lack of discipline going on right now with all of the penalties. They're really shooting themselves in the foot right now out on the football field, and as a result, can't get anything going really offensive, at least against that Vikings defense this past weekend. So they've got some things they need to clean up here still, going into a really tough matchup this Sunday against the Falcons.
To be fair, I think that people maybe overlooked Minnesota a bit after the injury situation. They lost Bridgewater, they lost Peterson, they lost Matt Khalil on the offensive line. But what people didn't notice is this team has a really good defense. Now, it's not the Panthers' defense, but it's a lot better than people give it credit for. And they were really able to get after Cam Newton. 8 sacks, leading in part to 3 interceptions. That had to be as rough a game as Cam Newton's had in quite a bit of time, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. In fact, that was the second most sacks he's ever had. Philadelphia a couple of years ago laid 9 on him. But you don't often see that with Cam because he is such a good runner and an escape artist in his own right. So the Panthers in the first quarter were moving the ball just fine. And then, like I said, the penalty started in, and the defense of Minnesota just really started teeing off on him. And then the second half when they were having, 3-20 and 3rd-and-11, and they couldn't really run the ball like they wanted to in the second half, and that just opened Cam up to get just really knocked around by that Vikings defense. They were just flying all over the field, and they were ranked number 5 coming in. They're probably higher than that now because they really laid a whooping on Cam Newton, that's for sure.
And that's such a frustrating thing, too, when you're the Panthers' defense and you take a look at what they were trying to get accomplished because, look, they were pretty solid. Keekly was there.
Yeah.
Davis was there. They were getting the numbers that you'd expect, and they held the Vikings rather well. Bradford only threw for 171 and a touchdown. The whole team only ran for 58 yards, but those turnovers just doomed the Panthers. It's been a bugaboo this season, and it's something they've got to find a way to correct. How do they go about doing that besides, with the – basically trying to find a way to get the pressure off of Cam?
Yeah, that's what they were talking about in the locker room after the game on Sunday and once again yesterday, is they've just got to go back to the basics and start just making sure that they eliminate the mental mistakes and the mental errors and with the penalties, and then making sure that guys are lined up where they need to be and that everybody is doing their job and that somebody is stepping up and making plays, because the defense, like you said, they only allowed a little bit over 200 yards, which is a great Sunday. Normally your defense can do that. However, they didn't generate any turnovers, which has been a calling card of theirs in the past. They were not able to generate any turnovers. Sam Bradford really did a great job taking care of the football, the Vikings team as a whole. So they're having to sort of go back to square one right now. They were all in yesterday looking at the film, trying to see what they did wrong and go back and correct. And I have faith that they will. This is a very a really strong team. There are a lot of really good leaders on this team, and I think they're going to get things corrected this week.
They have an interesting matchup next week, of course. Now you have the Falcons, who were last seen on Monday night putting up, I'm not even sure they're done scoring touchdowns yet, 45 points. But that's on a bad Saints team that hasn't won, that has given up a ton of points over the course of the season thus far. And the truth is, so have the Falcons. The Falcons have given up a lot of points. Mm-hmm. This becomes a bit of an interesting matchup because on one hand you go, boy, these guys can score. Matt Ryan looks like he's getting in sync with Kyle Shanahan's offensive system. He's starting to look like the Matt Ryan we saw a few years ago. You know they can put up the points. But then again, we don't really know if the Falcons can stop anybody yet. Do you expect the Panthers to continue to take to the air? Or is this the kind of game where maybe they pressure them by trying to keep it on the ground and chew up the clock?
Well, I think what they want to do first every week, and this is a run-first team, they really would like to establish the run game. Of course, the problem here now is that Jonathan Stewart has been out with a hamstring injury, and as of right now, there's no word on when he's set to return, but they're going forward with Fozzie Whitaker, Mike Tolbert, and Cameron Artis Payne, the second-year player, and they ended up putting over 100 yards rushing last week, but nobody had any big runs except for the one that Whitaker had that was called back on a penalty. So they'd like to go down and pound the football. That's what they do best, and then let Cam Newton run when he needs to and then open up the passing game, because they weren't able to get Kelvin Benjamin involved at all on Sunday, which was just highly unusual, and that's been a big topic around here, is where the heck was Kelvin Benjamin against the Vikings. So I would think they'd like to go down there and start running the football. That's what they want to do first, and then take the passing game as it comes. But I would think they'd like to start running it first on that Falcons defense.
And they'll have an opportunity to do it because, like we said, the Falcons are giving up 30-plus points a game, and they give it up through everything, the air, the ground, and all that. So this may be the cure to what ails Carolina. But getting their ground game going, Artis Payne looks like he had an okay outing, obviously. It wasn't outstanding. Fozzie Whitaker had a little better average yards per carry. They think they can do this by committee until at least Stewart comes back. But one of the things they know they can count on, you brought up Kelvin Benjamin. That was remarkable to see him essentially just be invisible. But we are still seeing, even in the loss, like clockwork, Cam Newton to Greg Olsen, it's almost taken for granted that every single game these two guys are going to be a factor together.
Yeah, Cam Newton has so much trust in Greg Olsen. We call it, of course, the classic security blanket. That's really what Greg Olsen is for him. And Cam trusts him implicitly because he knows that he's going to run the right route and he's going to be there when Cam goes to him. And then when he goes to him, he's going to catch the football. And that's quite a luxury for any quarterback. And he and Cam just have a really good rapport out on the football field. And you'll see that every week, I'm sure, week in and week out. But they got to find a way to get somebody else involved too, which they had done up to this point. It was really unusual to not have Kelvin in the mix on Sunday. And that was, according to Mike Shula, the offensive coordinator here, for a couple of reasons, that Cam was getting him or overlooked him in some reads, and then what the Minnesota defense was doing, of course. But you got a lot of really good receivers on this football team, starting with Ted Ginn and Philly Brown. He had some catches on Sunday, but they like to have Cam is at his best when he's spinning the football to multiple receivers, not just to Greg Olsen and Kelvin Benjamin. He does the best, like he did last year without Kelvin Benjamin. One of the reasons they were so successful is because he was forced to spread the football around the field, and he really did a great job doing that. So they'd like him to be able to do that again.
On a team as good as the Panthers were last year, you don't expect to see some of the draft picks be impactful right off the bat. But Vernon Butler, the defensive tackle, now out with a high ankle sprain, that's going to be a little bit.
Yeah.
And then their second round pick, the cornerback out of Samford, James Bradberry, has basically become a starter, replacing Josh Norman. Now, he has a handful with Julio Jones next week. What have you seen out of James Bradberry, and how do you think he'll be able to fare against one of the league's elite wide receivers?
You know, Bradberry, he's not been acting like a rookie. Since the day he set foot in here in OTAs, he has a remarkable poise out on the football field. He really does. And I know that the scouts, that was one of the first things they said about him, was the game is not too big for him. He has been able to just come right in and not be overwhelmed and not be starstruck and not, you know, obviously he's going to make some rookie mistakes. He's had a few of those already, but he's done a really good job of stepping up to the plate and starting to make plays. He had an interception 2 weeks ago. And that was a big deal for him to get his first NFL interception in a regular season game. But he's been doing a really good job. And we have a lot of, well, not a whole lot of veterans in the secondary. There's a couple of them, Robert McClain, who is another cornerback, and then at safety, who have sort of taken him under their wings and really tried to help mentor him. But he's done a pretty darn good job, considering he hasn't made a lot of glaring errors. Let's put it that way. He's holding it down now. Julio Jones, that's a whole different ballgame, of course. He hasn't faced anybody of that caliber yet, and that's going to be a big challenge for him. But I think he's going to do okay. He's done a good job so far this season.
Well, Panthers fans, you know, don't panic just yet. They may be 1-2, but the two losses are to two of the five undefeated teams still left in the NFL. So not a lot of reason to panic. But when you're listening to the game on the Panthers Radio Network, you'll hear Sharon Thorsland right there on the sideline. Also doing work for WBT, and follow her at Sharon A Sports on Twitter to keep up to date with your defending NFC champions. Sharon, thank you so much for the time today.
Thanks. I enjoyed it.
Terrific to have you, and hopefully we'll be able to check back later in the season with Sharon. In the meantime, you'll find her prowling the Panthers sidelines. When we come back, we'll be talking to the coach, get a little football knowledge from Brian Billick. Stay tuned.
Around the league.
And now to go around the NFL, we bring in the coach, Brian Billick, brought to you by SeatGeek. Visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. Make sure you and your family are getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time. Coach, an interesting week where the NFL starts to sort some things out here. It's only 3 weeks in, but it feels like we've learned a couple things about some teams. And then there's a few we found out we didn't learn anything at all. I want to start right off with the Cardinals and Bills, a game in which Rex Ryan's seat could not have been any hotter, was basically almost in flames, and then they go out and absolutely trounce the Cardinals in a game where, quite frankly, Carson Palmer, to me, looked for the first time like he maybe was getting a little bit old. What did you see from both those teams this week?
Yeah, I think it was a surprise. It was an opportunity for Arizona, and you can always talk about that going from the quasi-West Coast to East Coast. They were playing at basically 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock in the morning body time, which is always difficult. But in an opportunity, in an atmosphere, and as you said, we've all talked all week about the pressure that Rex Ryan and the Bills were under at home. Had it not started out not well, you kind of know the way that crowd would have gone. But the thing that jumped out at me was just how much more physical the Bills were on both sides of the ball. Arizona came into the season as a physical front seven. They wanted to be able to run the ball. We know the explosives they could have with Carson Palmer and Larry Fitzgerald in that group. And they just lack that physicalness, and that's something that's got to be a concern going forward.
So let's go over to the game that I thought it was early. It was the Thursday game, and a little bit stunning, really. The Houston Texans, off to a good start, just looked completely hapless and hopeless in Foxborough. Jacoby Brissett, in his very first start, showed up and played pretty well. Looked like Bill Belichick managed to just scheme Brock Osweiler into oblivion. How much of this do you chalk up to a bad game by the Texans where you just kind of crumple it up and say, let's go on to next week? Or how many things did you see in that game that maybe concerned you about the Texans? And by the way, who are the Patriots going to play at quarterback next week?
Yeah, good question. We all have this well-founded confidence in New England that any time they're at home, that's just a tough place to play. It's a tough place to play. And why are tough places to play? Because the team is good. Yeah, the crowd is a difference and can be loud noise and stuff like that. But they're tough at home because they're good. And you knew the game plan they wanted to have. Brissett was less than 20 passes, very efficient, didn't turn the ball over, converted on some third down with his legs, saw a whole bunch of blue air at blunt. They ran for 185 yards total on the night on close to 40 attempts. And you could see that Houston just couldn't get anything going. It seemed like almost every three and out, which begs the question, okay, where does Houston go from here? Yeah, they're in a division that looks to be very winnable. But again, the challenge for Houston is, okay, can you progress through the playoffs? Have you shown any sign that your team, if in the playoffs, can go on the road, it can go into a Pittsburgh, go into a New England, and win? And they certainly didn't on Thursday night. Doesn't mean that they're not going to get better. And for New England, it's this faith in Bill Belichick is, maybe we don't even need a quarterback. Maybe we'll just direct snap to LeGarrette Blount, Julian Edelman. We're going to spot you. We're going to spot you, Tom Brady. We're going to spot you, Jimmy Garoppolo. We're going to spot you all these things. really, it's kind of like the presidential debate. It's a low expectation coming into this next game, and this is going to be interesting with them playing the Buffalo Bills, because with the big win, the assumption is, and with no Tom Brady and no Garoppolo, and that they should just kill the Patriots coming off a really good win. If they don't, this is going to be interesting.
I guess that's a really good point, because I've talked about Rex Ryan a little bit, and we saw the Bills get the big win. Rex Ryan is already in full week taunting the Patriots on his Monday conversation, you know, kind of had a grumbly little Bill Belichick imitation. He's had a tendency of doing this before, and it's what makes him such an entertaining guy to cover in the NFL. But it also sometimes gets you in trouble, because you've run into situations with coaches, with players, with anybody who are sometimes writing checks with their mouth that they can't necessarily cash. If the Bills don't get this done against New England, does Rex Ryan stand the chance of basically undoing some of the good work that he did this week?
They could, but you've got to take that chance from the standpoint of, and knowing Rex as well as I do, and the time he was with me, if you corner Rex, this is exactly what you're going to get. It eventually wore out in New York. Why? Because eventually you've got to win. That's the only way to back it up. It's like any, and I hate to use the term bully, because I'm not referring to him as a bully, but, you know, sometimes the best way to confront a bully is just punch him in the nose. And all of a sudden now, he's no longer a bully. Well, you've got to follow it up with a win. And for them, now it's in Buffalo. And you know the fans in Buffalo and everything. They've got that little bit of chip on their shoulder. And I think they love it, providing you win. But if you do that and you don't win, particularly under these circumstances, it was great to have a great win at Arizona at home. But if you're Buffalo, and if you're Rex Ryan, And now you're playing the team that is obviously everybody's in the division's arch rival, a team that's won the last 8 division titles. And they don't have a Tom Brady, and they don't have Jimmy Garoppolo, and even where they had Brissett or whoever they have in there. If you can't win now in New England, then this creates we're right back to where we were square one last week, and where do you go from here?
Let's head over to the AFC, where no Teddy Bridgewater, no Adrian Peterson, no Matt Khalil, no problem for the Vikings, who go into Carolina and really play an impressive game, beating the Panthers 22-10. Their second statement game of the year, despite it seems that the pieces and parts are falling off the wagon, the Vikings have to be off to one of the more impressive and improbable starts of the season. When you see the way they've played in the last couple weeks, what's the ceiling for these guys?
Well, I don't think there is one, and you can fill it up in 3 things: defense. Sam Bradford's been great for them, and they'll find a little bit of a rhythm of a running game. But this defense is as good as I've seen, and I've got a little bit of a history with this. This is good, and it's a kind of a no-name defense, with no disrespect to the players. I mean, to most lay people, you're going to name someone on the Minnesota Vikings defense, and they might come up with Anthony Barr, but outside of that, you don't. Now, still, that's a talented defense. They had 8 starters that were our former first or second round draft choice. So this is a talented defense. Mike Zimmer's brilliant. They don't do a lot. They're not a complex defense, but they're fundamentally sound in what they do. They know how to attack you. They're great open field tacklers. This defense is as advertised, and this is a team with a quarterback that should be able to manage what they need to do to complement this defense that is very much the team to beat in the NFC right now, along with the Philadelphia Eagles.
When I look at the Vikings, what I see is a comparison to last year's Denver Broncos in a lot of ways, a team that, again, very talented defense, not all that tricky. There's not any sort of gimmicks or anything you have to overcome. But it seems to me like this is maybe, to an extent, a poor man's Denver Broncos from last year, with an offense that maybe has an opportunity to match that or even exceed the Broncos, and they managed to go the whole way. So when you look at the Vikings, that's a pretty fascinating story. We'll see where that goes. But as for the Panthers, they lost 1 regular season game last year. They've already lost 2. From the macro level, what seems to be off?
Well, and that's pretty lofty bar, you know, to win 2 games. And so, oh my gosh, you doubled your roster from last year. Well, wait a minute now. That's pretty tough sledding. I think what we saw in Carolina, everybody talks about the Super Bowl hangover. I don't know that I believe in that, although the numbers might indicate that. But when you play Carolina, the key is you got to get Cam Newton to throw the ball 35 times or more. Now, you could say that about a lot of teams, but Cam Newton's numbers, his productivity, falls off precipitously. But he has to throw the ball 35 times or more. His 2.5 touchdowns to interception ratio drops to 1-1. His completion percentage drops down. I think he's 7-16, something like that, in games that he throws the ball more than 35 times. And so that's exactly what happened in this game. I think he threw it exactly 35 times. And they couldn't get the running game going. Again, let's go back to the defense, the turnovers that they created, the short field they were able to put that offense on. So I think this was more of less of an indictment of Carolina than it was noteworthy of what Minnesota could do on the road in Carolina.
Well, let's go to another team that's struggling. After their loss last night in Monday Night Football, the Saints are 0-3. They're 0-2 at home, which is even more disturbing. Where does this team have to get better, and how much time do they have left in which to do it?
Well, this keeps coming back to the same formula. This is a team whose defense is bad in biblical proportion. I mean, I've been saying all week long that the biggest concern I had going in, and this is a perfect example, you look at the game. Drew Brees feels like if I don't score 30 points, and last night 30 was not enough, but if we don't score 30 points, we're going to lose. When he gets in that mode, 2 years ago in 2014, he threw 17 interceptions. Why? Because they were next to last in the league in defense. 2 years before that, 2012, he threw 19 interceptions. And that's not Drew Brees. Why? Because they were last in the league in defense. They've got to go out and you know, if we don't score 30 points, we're going to lose. And that puts Drew Brees in a situation where he has to maybe make some throws or do some things that he wouldn't normally do in a more equitable situation. Even though Drew Brees had a brilliant night, Matt Ryan, who now the last two games has looked more like the Matt Ryan of old in terms, you know, had a very equitable night in what he did. And I just think the defense that New Orleans is spotting team and what Drew Brees has to do to overcome that. I mean, throwing the ball 54 times, I don't care who you are, it's just not a good thing.
Well, we'll wrap up with one of the faces of the league here. Last week, there were questions surrounding Aaron Rodgers, questions surrounding the Packers. You know, is something really wrong? Packers come out, Aaron Rodgers throws 4 touchdowns in the first half and does it effortlessly. For the Packers now, they got Eddie Lacy had his first ever 100-yard rushing game in September. Rodgers looks right again. Jordy Nelson is healthy. Was this just maybe the start of something special for the Packers this week against the Lions?
Well, and I think you just pointed out the key for them, their ability to run the ball. In the previous games, they didn't have that kind of rhythm. They need to have that running game as a balance. The unique thing about the Green Bay Packers is the receiving core, like their entire team. It's homegrown. It's always has been. When you had Donald Driver and Greg Jennings and in the heyday of their Super Bowl, and then a young Jordy Nelson. And I thought Jordy Nelson, when he got hurt last year, was great, great opportunity for the other receivers to get into that rhythm, you know, with now Devontae Adams and then and Randall Cobb and Rodgers, the tight end, to really, you know, develop that rapport with Aaron Rodgers. And then now when you had Jordy Nelson back, boy, you're off and running. And early on, we didn't see that. We saw a bit of that last night, or on Sunday. Now, what we also saw was the defense that kind of let Detroit back in the door a little bit. So that's still my biggest concern for them. But offensively, it's hard to look at Green Bay and not feel like they may not lead the league in offense that we're used to seeing in these mega games, but they've got some balance and a plan. I like it when they come out of the no huddle, when they have a little more orchestrated offense. I think that suits them a little bit better. So they obviously have got to feel very good about where they are. But they're also in a division now facing a team that we just talked about, the Minnesota Vikings, that are pretty darn good.
He is the coach. This is Brian Billick, and we tell you every week when you listen to him, you become a smarter football fan. Thanks for your time, Coach. We'll catch you next week.
Sounds good.
Remember to visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. They present the coach, and make sure your family gets getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time. So visit SeatGeek.com. Next up, we're going to overtime.
Overtime.
It is overtime, and joining us today, the inimitable Sean Salisbury. You know him from SB Nation Radio. Hey, I also know a guy from there. That's me. And you can find him at Sean Unfiltered on Twitter. I highly suggest, if you're not doing that, you should do that already. Sean, how are you doing today? Oh, hey, no problem at all. So we have a six-pack of questions ready for overtime. Let's start right here. Trevor Siemian had 312 yards, four touchdowns in Cincinnati, his very first road start for the Denver Broncos. Judging at the quarterbacking they had last year, is he a better option right now than Peyton Manning or Brock Osweiler was in 2015?
You know, better option, here's the difference. You had Brock, who was more physical than Peyton, and Peyton at the time, you know, when the change was made, and Peyton, who is the smartest quarterback we've ever had, and then the most – the best at manipulating a game plan or a defense that we've ever seen. So, and cerebral. So you had a combination of both, but I think this kid's got both. Now, I don't want to go overboard and say after three starts, he's better than Brock, but Brock only had six starts. So physically, and the ability, the things that he's showing, especially last week on the road, are pretty impressive. I'm not ready to go there yet, just right now after three games, because what Peyton did was keep you out of bad plays for the most part as well. So I think that combination's better still, but I'm impressed with this kid, the quantum leaps he's made from week one to week, you know, now heading into week four. I give him a lot of credit, and I'm actually excited and proud of him. It's fun to watch, but I'll still stick with the two-headed guys from last year because of their experience.
Let's move on to a two-headed guy that's turned out by a necessity up in New England. Jimmy Garoppolo, Jacoby Brissett, don't know which one's going to play, if either. Maybe it's even Julian Edelman, but does it matter? Is this team going to hand Tom Brady a bright, shiny 4-0 record upon his return from suspension?
Yeah, I think so, especially since they have this game at home again. Now, you know that they're going to try to pressure either guy, but the key, if you're going to blitz a young quarterback, you're probably playing into their hands, because then they don't have to go through the whole process of reading it out. They can just pick one receiver and bet the best matchup and throw it. So that's the problem. The key is play them zone and make them go through their progressions. But I'm not sure it matters, although obviously Garoppolo gives you not only the feet and the arm. I think you're a little more limited with Jacoby Brissett. That being said, we've never had a coach in the history of this game who's a better in-game adjuster and better game planner then Bill Belichick. Doesn't matter who they play, I do believe they're going to be 4-0, especially since this game's at home. I think Garoppolo's actually going to play, which is an advantage for New England, and Tom Brady comes back, and Cleveland is his first start, and they will be 5-0 after that one.
Jared Goff, the first pick in the draft, hasn't seen the field yet. No idea when he will. Are the Rams being too cautious with him, judging by the success of all these other young signal callers this season?
I believe so. Now, Case Keenum's a serviceable starter and a pretty solid backup and carved a niche in the league, but they've got a really good defense. And at some point, this just tells you how far behind the Wentzes and Dak Prescott that Goff is coming from his system. It just does. So, and Jeff Fisher is always leery. He's done it with players before about putting young guys in, but as long as they keep winning, he's going to be able to buy time without from the fans without having to start Jared Goff. But it just shows you terminology and how difficult it is to come from that system, an air raid system, and apply it to NFL, you know, the mechanics of getting under center. So they're going to stick with this as long as they possibly can, unless they lose three or four in a row. But Goff's, I didn't think Goff should have been the first pick of the draft. I think he'll be fine, but I like Wentz. I actually like Prescott even better as well, and Paxton Lynch. So we'll see in the long run, but this is probably the best thing because he came out of camp not ready to play, and Case Keenum's getting him by.
Over in Green Bay, Eddie Lacy notched his first ever 100-yard outing in September, as hard as that is to believe. Notoriously slow starter, but we talked about the weight loss. Is this the year that he finally blossoms into one of the league's great running backs?
He's going to have to, and I think as long as he stays focused on making sure his body's right and can stay healthy, yeah. And it is hard to fathom that guy's first September 100-yard rushing game this early in the season. It is hard to believe, but as long as Rodgers stays upright and they stay in rhythm, they're a difficult team to beat in the NFC. And I'm going to tell you the key for them, not only is protecting Rodgers, but it'll make it even easier on Aaron Rodgers and everybody else if Eddie Lacy stays healthy and can average a 22 to 30 carries or touch of a game. So, yeah, I think this is a monster step for him. And in a league that we're kind of deficient of top flight first, you know, upper echelon, Todd Gurley, Le'Veon Bell type backs, I think Eddie Lacy can be one of them as long as the commitment to watching out for his body and taking care of it's there, because he'll get his touches, especially as the season rolls on in a cold weather Green Bay.
Sean, after the Saints' blowout loss on Monday night, Drew Brees talked about that game and said he thinks things will turn around for the Saints. How do they turn around when they're giving up 30-something points a game, and is it too late already?
Yeah, they're not. It's not turning around. That's because Superman, meaning Drew Brees, is so optimistic and has had to carry a franchise. Can you imagine how bad they'd be without him? I mean, good gracious. He has to hang 35 or 40 a week to keep them in a game. They're the notoriously bad defense, and maybe that has something to do with the fact that their offense, you know, scores a lot of points and plays fast and throws the football. But that's in it, you know, a lot of teams do that. So that's a bad excuse. They've got a lot of injuries on defense, but they haven't drafted well either. They're underachievers. It's a bad defense. Sometimes you just got to recognize that your personnel is not as good as the other guys, and it's impossible to ask a quarterback to throw 35 and 40 points a game on you and to throw for 5,000 yards a season and 45 touchdowns. Brees is phenomenal. He is the franchise, but it's not going to change. That team is going to battle for, you know, they'll be lucky to win 6 or 7 games, and if they do, it'll be because of him. It's not changing, though. The culture of that team is offense, bad defensive personnel, and it doesn't matter who the coordinator is, Rob Ryan, Dennis Allen. They're just not, whether they're not committed to it or whether they don't understand how to play it, bottom line is the New Orleans Saints will always, well, at least for now, until the defense gets better, doesn't matter how good the offense is, they'll always be chasing people.
Now for the final question of our six-pack, we go to the Pacific Northwest. Russell Wilson is battling injuries to both his legs. Now, obviously, you want your line to protect you better, but at this point, is Russell Wilson now responsible for finding a way to better protect himself?
Yeah, he is. But he's really, you know, when he is he's taking some hits, and that offensive line is not good, and he had to overcome that last year and really took another step in his game. But they've got to make a commitment to that position. That's number one. But now we know from the ankle to now the knee, where is he going to be? You know, and after this, they have the bye week, so you know, getting ready to play the Jets. Do you rest him and say with Arizona's 1-2 starts, St. Louis, I mean, or the Los Angeles Rams don't have a great offense, should we rest him? I think if he's 85% or more, you play him. But he is really good at finding pockets to slide in. So I give him a lot of credit. The problem is, taking hits in the pocket, you can't defend, and if you can't get out of bounds and it's 3rd and 3 and you got to dive for a first down, you're going to put yourself in a bind. But he is a great player, a great playmaker, but also one of the smartest running / passing quarterbacks we have in this league. But they have to keep him healthy, because we saw them finally break out offensively without Russell Wilson. That team becomes, that team will have to do what Denver's doing for the most part and win on offense. But Russell Wilson, if he's close to being healthy, they'll play him.
That is Sean Salisbury spitting the truth over at SB Nation Radio and especially on his Twitter feed. Make sure you're following that at Sean Unfiltered. Thanks so much for your time today, Sean. Really appreciate it.
Honored to be on. I really appreciate you guys having me. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that's a wrap for now, but be sure to check all the archives posted over at audioboom.com. Search for NFL Files and check out all the podcasts for every team in the league, because we cover them all. My name is Sean Drotar, and you can follow me on Twitter at sdrotar. That's S-D-R-O-T-A-R, and I will catch you next week.
This has been a Sports Joe production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsjoe.com.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.